Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Now, back to the guys.
Jones and Keefe.
Jones and Keefe.
On WEEI.
3-2. Here it is. Drive into left field. Way back. Ref Snyder looks up. Adios. Three-run homer for Guerrero. Another total bullpen meltdown in Toronto. And it is 4-2 Blue Jays.
Another bad loss for the Red Sox last night. Make that two in a row in Toronto. They're just 2-5 against the Jays this year.
And the Jays aren't good.
No, in fact,
I picked the Jays to win the division for like four straight years, and this was not one of them. You're like, they're down. Like they re-signed Guerrero, which was obviously affected the Red Sox future plans, perhaps, but they're not that good.
The Jays hadn't won back-to-back games since the last time they played the Red Sox, when they beat them three times in a row.
Yeah, so they're still under 500, aren't they?
They pretty much only beat up on the Red Sox. The Jays are
losing
15-16.
Yeah, it's like five of their 15 wins are coming against Sox.
Correct. Yeah. Good way of putting it. Yikes. Red Sox are one game over 500. Now one game into the month of May. So how do you feel about the Red Sox at this point? Is it time to worry a little bit that they've underachieved? 617-779-7937. We'll get you a four-pack of questions in the Friday four-pack coming up at 11:30, as we do every Friday here on Jones and Keefe. We have the Week in Review at 12:45, so stay tuned for it. A couple more names on the text line, Keefe.
What to be worried about?
Maybe we should be concerned about. Oh, we gave you a top five Friday if you want to seek those out at Jones and Keefe on socials. It'll be up there shortly. We both had Bill number one on our list. Let's see. What are some good ones here?
Alec Baldwin. See, I'm not like worried about it. Like he's
Alec
in a bad
Baldwin,
way.
I couldn't but, like, be less concerned about.
That's all on him.
I don't feel bad about him at all.
No, that's on him.
Run around shooting people in the face. I don't feel bad for him.
Does he have a reality show on HBO now? Did that pop up when you were?
I guess on some level I feel bad about him for who he's married to. So
yeah, that's
actually,
true.
You know what?
It's a little Belichick like.
Yeah.
Not the stuff from the film set, but like that part of it.
Yeah, I don't feel bad for him, but yikes, that's a nightmare.
That's a whole.
It might be a deserved nightmare.
That's a whole thing.
I'm surprised you guys didn't have Tara Reid on the list.
Oh yeah.
How's she doing? I feel like I thought Sharknado
was a good bounce back for her.
Me too.
I thought that was good.
I think she might be in a Lohan category.
She was in like eight movies in a row on sci-fi.
Well, at one point we were worried about her, but now she's back, kind of.
Yeah. No, she's a working actress again,
I believe.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know
what the content is. Text line says Nitro.
Your guy Nitro.
My guy Nitro.
That's fair.
I looked him up.
Should we be worried?
Danny Lee Clark doing fine.
Okay.
He did write a book about surviving a heart attack at a very young age.
All right, so he would have been on the list, but now he's all right.
But he's good now. And then maybe the best one, Keith. This is one we probably should have on the list. How about Sammy Sosa?
Yeah. Sosa should be on there. Another guy. Was Sosa's peak right around the same time as Britney Spears' peak?
Sure. Yeah.
So if you told,
right?
If you told a young Rich Keefe that Britney Spears and Sammy Sosa, 20 years later, were going to look and act the way that they do now, I would not have believed you.
Wouldn't have believed it.
No.
Would have ruined would have ruined your worldview is what it would have done, quite frankly.
Yeah, that would rock you.
Red Sox at this point in time, as we said, one game over 500.
Not great.
It's back-to-back bad losses. If last night, I don't think last night was worse than the night prior, but those are two bad losses. Uh-huh. Abreu just butchers a ball in right field, and then the next batter, it's over the fence. As the Blue Jays go from down 2-1, and Tanner Houck pitched very well. You waste another good performance. Houck has had like two good performances. They wasted both of them because Abreu can't catch, and the Blue Jays go in front 4-2. You lose that game last night. Injuries piling up as well. Christian Campbell, a scratch in the lineup with some sort of rib issue, which doesn't sound great. Walker Buehler was on his way back to Boston. I'm assuming he's here by now. I don't even know if they've announced a starter for this game. Coming up, but I think the supposition was that Hunter Dobbins could be in the mix to replace him. So Walker Buehler out of your rotation. Campbell, who knows? Marcelo Meyer, if you want to throw this one on the pile, was scratched yesterday in Worcester with a back issue. He's supposed to play shortstop. So is it time to get concerned about the Red Sox after a month plus?
Yeah, I thought they'd be a lot better than they are. I mean, they're one game over 500 because you can always go to the counter, and Bradford brought this up yesterday, and it's true. The American League's not great. Nobody's running away with it in the American League. You're not in the same division. I know the Dodgers have come back down to earth, but like they got out to a really good start. So you're whatever you are, game and a half, two games out of first place. But just looking at them, should they be one game over 500 at this point? No, they should be a lot better than that. And it's some of these games that they certainly should have won last night and they should have won the night before, and they find ways to blow both games. You've gotten some pretty good pitching performances, right? The last two great ones, two very, like, you should have won the Tanner Houck start last night.
Giolito.
You should have won Giolito's start.
Yep.
Whether you agree with putting him out there for the sixth inning or not, you should have won the game. He was up 6-3 when he left, so they should have won that game. And then last night, this is where I do start to look to Alex Cora a little bit. And you know me, baseball manager, I don't think gives you a ton of wins or takes away a ton of wins, right? It's you know, managing personalities. It's a grind of a season, but it's way different than, say, football. But there are individual decisions you can make within a game. Now, I agreed with him. Giolito for the sixth inning, fine. That's okay. Last night, though, Vlad Guerrero with two guys on, not just two guys on second and third, one out, and you pitch to him. And he socks a dinger?
Right.
Now, I know he hasn't hit a lot of dingers this year, but it's still Vlad Guerrero.
With first base open.
Yeah, first base open.
So, yeah, that one.
I would have put him on, and I guess, you know, at the time, you'd be like, oh, is that revisions history? Because you do have another guy coming up who can smash a dinger.
Right, I was just going to say, Santander just did it the day before, and
but
he's on
least,
deck, right?
You set up the double play, and you take the bat out of Guerrero's hand. So I would have done that. I think that is a decision you can look at Alex Cora and say, is that the one that, would you do that one again? And, you know, if so, why? Because
yeah.
I think that was a mistake.
I watched a chunk of Cora after the game. I don't think he was asked about it after the game last night.
Why would he be?
But maybe he'll get asked about that today with the Red Sox back at Fenway taking on the Twins, I believe. So I think that was questionable, Keith. And again, let's not let Abreu off the hook because Abreu just,
sure.
I mean, that's a horrendously bad play.
Uh-huh.
And he's a good defensive player, but it's a bad play that he made last night on Bo Bichette, which allowed runners to be at second and third with the base open. I'd rather pitch to Santander than Guerrero. You're right. Guerrero hasn't had a lot of home runs this season.
It's still Guerrero.
But I would rather pitch to Santander. I don't really view that as a second guess, but if you do, whatever, fine. It's a second guess for the manager. Should he have pitched to Vladdy in that spot? The answer would be no.
Santander, by the way, does have power. He's also hitting
like 170, right?
178.
Is that what it is? Yeah, 178.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think to me that's an easy one on who to pitch to. Never mind. As you said, Keith, you're setting up the force everywhere. You're setting up the double play. That's a pretty easy one that Cora missed out on for whatever reason. I did not have an issue with this. I'm curious because, and I'll stay consistent. The night before, I'm like, I wonder if they could have got Giolito out after five innings. Would you have stuck with Houck longer before going to the bullpen last night?
No, seven innings is plenty. Like, and I think with him, like, let's leave on a high note. Let's get you out of there. And, you know, if it was five or six, maybe you have that question. But, yeah, he was rolling. I mean, the pitch count was still really low.
He was only at 86 after seven, and he was rolling. I agree. Yeah. I would not have stuck with him. I think they made the right move by going to Slayton. Just like the game before, it's hard to get too mad at Garrett Whitlock for giving up a bomb when he's been good. It's hard to get too mad at Slayton for giving up a bomb, although Slayton's numbers are not as good as I guess I thought.
No, they're not. I mean, last night really
he had one
him.
Really bad outing in the beginning of the season that skews his numbers.
It does,
a little bit.
But I feel like largely he's been good and trustworthy in that spot. So I don't really have an issue with that aspect of it. I do have an issue with pitching to Vlad.
Do you go the inning before? I guess, but I'm not doing that either. Meaning, like, Hauk has six shutout innings.
Do you need to go back to him and give up the bomb to Varsho?
But I feel like he's been pretty consistent where he has gone maybe that extra inning even early in the year where I didn't think it would happen. We saw it the other night with Giolito. We've seen it a couple of times with Crochet. And he did it there with Tanner Houck. So even though he gives up the bomb, overall, I mean, seven innings, one run, no walks, six strikeouts. Best start of the year for Houck.
Do you agree with this? You guys talk about baseball like it's 1995. Alex Cora doesn't decide who they're going to pitch. That comes from someone on a laptop that may not even be in the stadium.
See, I don't know about that one.
See, I don't either.
I mean, a lot of it is from a nerd on a laptop. Yeah. I agree with that. But I don't know about that specific one.
I think he's given piles of data to go over and use. And if he doesn't do what they want him to do, he's going to have to answer to it. But I think in-game pitching decisions like that, Cora's making.
Intentional walks and stuff like that?
Yeah.
I would think
when they give the hook to Houck and when he didn't give it to Giolito the game before, I think those sort of things are on the manager. Now, again, he's probably going to hear from a whole bunch of dweebs with reams of data yelling at him.
Including
they don't
Preslo.
Like what he did. Right. Yeah. So I agree they have a lot of input, but that in-game stuff, I think the manager, it's the one thing the manager actually has some autonomy in.
Yeah.
Shaughnessy weighed in on this today.
Okay.
In the Boston Globe. He says, after all the good vibes and money spent, and the Bregman, Crochet, Bueller, Chapman additions, the 2025 Red Sox went into the weekend one game worse, 17-16, than they were after 33 games a year ago. So they're not even as good at this point on the calendar as they were last year. And we all agree they're way more talented. And on top of that, I think most of the new additions have worked out pretty well. I mean,
Bregman's been a machine.
Definitely Crochet and Bregman have worked out spectacular.
Chapman's been good
overall.
Bueller, I think more good than bad, but not perfect.
He's got a good record. I'll pull up the exact
numbers. Well, it's funny because last year you had two guys to start the year. Tanner Houck and Cutter Crawford were insane. And then it obviously wasn't really sustainable. I mean, Houck had a good season, but it wasn't really sustainable for them all year. I mean, but I certainly thought they'd be a lot better.
That's a fair way of putting it. Bueller's been more bad than good. Hasn't been great, but more bad, more good than bad. Yeah, more good than bad for Bueller for sure.
No, but you look up and down the lineup, and like the one guy that stands out is still Tristan Casas. As far as like the regular players, you're like, all right, so you have one guy that's not hitting, so that shouldn't sink your team. And they're scoring plenty of runs. I know last night was only two, but where they rank in the league is pretty high. The pitching and the bullpen, like, it feels like, all right, it shouldn't be that bad. I know the defense was a bigger issue, and it still pops up here and there. But the fact that they're only one game over 500 in May is a little surprising. I thought they were going to be certainly better than they were last year. I thought they'd be threatening, like, 90 wins this season.
Here, to me, is the difference. Last year, you knew they were overachieving, and they overachieved. You're reminded of this watching, and we were two of the only people who watched the Keith, but you're reminded of watching the clubhouse. Yeah. They were... I mean, right up until the trade deadline, they were really in it.
Yeah, they were.
And you forget how long they were in it last year. But we all kind of knew what the team was, and they were playing over their heads, and the other shoe was always going to drop if they didn't do anything at the deadline, and they didn't, and it dropped. And I think that was predictable. I mean, this team feels like it is underachieving, which means, I mean, you could read that and say that's disappointing. It is. But you could also read it and say, once they get this figured out, there's much more ceiling for this team than there was a year ago.
Oh, yeah.
And much more of a chance they're going to be in it at the end than the team a year ago, which predictably fell off.
Yeah, because last year there were so many spots where you're like, well, they need this. They need this, then they need this. This team, it feels like they have a lot of the guys in place. They just need to get it all going together, right? Like some of Bregman's defensive miscues at third base earlier in the year. You're like, all right, I assume he's going to figure that out. We're still waiting on Casas to figure it out at the plate. We're waiting for Tanner Houck to figure it out. Maybe last night goes a long way and Tanner Houck pitching a little bit better. And if Giolito is at least decent and he takes, let's say he takes all the Sean Newcomb starts from the start of the year. Like, okay, now you might have something in place where, I mean, we were just talking yesterday about how there doesn't seem to be an obvious spot for Roman Anthony or Marcelo Meyer. So like, that goes to show you, like, the roster is built pretty well. They're just, like, fumbling away some of these games. These two this week are really stand out because, like, what a swing that is. I mean, they could be, not that it's an amazing record, but they could easily be sitting here 19-14.
Yeah.
Right? And you're like, okay, kind of on pace to where they need to be.
Yeah.
But they lose the bullpen kind of blows these games. Maybe a coaching decision blows these games. And now you're talking about something completely different.
I'll highlight this. The Dave Schoenfield at ESPN mm-hmm. went through and graded all the teams in the first month of the year. He gave him a B minus, which is that the same grade Bradfoe gave yesterday? B minus,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah.
Same grade. So he gave him a B minus. He went through and kind of highlighted how everybody's played. But he had this line in there. He said the Red Sox had the easiest schedule in the majors in the month of April.
Yeah.
According to Baseball Reference,
yeah,
including
White Sox, Blue Jays.
7 games against the White Sox, exactly, Keith, where they were only 4-3 against Chicago.
Which is what they were last year, too, against the White Sox, who had a historically bad year.
So, you know, put another way, not only have they underachieved, but they underachieved against a wretched schedule, like the worst in baseball, according to Baseball Reference. A bunch of games against the White Sox, throw the Blue Jays on top of it, they're 2-5
Yeesh.
Against Toronto. So that puts it in a certain light. You mentioned how are you going to get guys like Roman Anthony into the lineup? I mean, it's a bad way to do it if Christian Campbell is hurt, but let's say Campbell goes on the IL. He was scratched last night. No update from Cora after the game other than just a quick, he's dealing with something. Maybe there'll be more details today. Campbell was going to play in center field last night. I think Ref Snyder replaced him in left and Duran slid over, I think is what they eventually did. So Campbell's been in the mix in the outfield is my only point. Would that be an avenue to get Roman Anthony to the bigs? Or if he wasn't scratched yesterday,
I would say Meyer's hurt.
Well, now that we're talking it out, Meyer was scratched, but...
Oh, right.
He was scratched with back stiffness, but...
Yeah, no, I know.
But do you think they scratched him to...
I don't know. So if everybody's healthy, let's just say... So let's say Campbell's down and it's an extended IL, then wouldn't Meyer just be the obvious second baseman? Unless you want to do this, do you move Rafaela to second base and put Anthony in the outfield? Say, Rafaela, you're the second baseman now until Campbell comes back.
Look,
Anthony, you're in the outfield with Duran and Abreu.
Here's what I'm saying. If Campbell's going on IL, and there's no reports of that yet, he was a scratch, we're just kind of playing it out, gaming
it
out.
No.
If he's scratched, one of those two should be up.
100%. Like, what are you going to have, David Hamilton start every game?
Thank you. So Anthony should be up in the outfield, and you can play Rafaela wherever. Or Marcelo Meyer should be up. Maybe he's scratched for a back issue. Maybe he's scratched for other reasons. They scratched Hunter Dobbins yesterday, and he's expected to replace Walker Buehler in the rotation.
No, but if Campbell's legitimately out for 10 games or more, whatever it has to be, right?
Call one of those guys up.
Yes. And, you know, maybe it provides a little bit of spark or whatever. It's not going to solve everything. It's not going to fix your bullpen late in games. But whatever, like that would be one thing you can do.
But I would say, you know, that's not the way you want to do it. You don't want to lose Campbell. The idea was, Cedan Rafaela, they're replacing him because he's not hitting. And, oh, by the way, he's falling asleep in the outfield defensively on key plays and extra innings. Or Abreu. Like, Abreu had a nice start. He's still hitting very well. Butchered that ball last night. Like, at some point you say, Abreu's a good player, but we have a better one sitting in Worcester. Like, ideally, those are the guys you're taking out.
Yeah.
Campbell's not ideal, but maybe there's an avenue to get those guys up here, which I think with the team underachieving for a month, and B-minus to me means they're underachieving. Bradfoe gave that grade. ESPN gave that grade. If they've been underachieving, getting a shot in the arm from a player like Anthony and or Meyer, it could be what the team needs. So,
yeah, I wonder if... either Willie or Abreu, who got out to the hottest start possible, or Cedan Rafaela, it gets to the point where one of those guys proves it, like, all right, good, useful player, not an everyday player,
right.
And then that paves the way for Anthony or Meyer.
At that point, you trade him for pitching at the deadline, you call both of those guys up.
Also fair.
They better not wait till the deadline to call these guys up.
Well, no, but I mean,
though. They're going to play the service time game either way.
Yeah, it feels like
but the service time game starts way before the debt. That's like...
No,
that's,
I know.
That's
like
definitely
not gonna,
in July.
You're not going to force him into the lineup.
Well, the injuries might get him in, is what it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm wondering. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Campbell's back in the lineup today. Who knows? But I'm just saying, if he's not and he's going on the IL, who are you replacing him with from Worcester? Hopefully one of those two. 617-779-7937. You can jump in here on Jones and Keefe. It's a Friday, which means you have a four-pack of questions. The Friday four-pack right after Trending with Billy Lanny.
The Red Sox front office report this week with Craig Breslow, brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh, and by findmassmoney.gov. And it is the chief baseball officer of the Boston Red Sox, Craig Breslow, who joins us this morning. Hey, Craig.
Hey, good morning.
Lucas Giolito, first start back last night. How did you think it went?
Yeah, I thought he threw the ball really, really well. Obviously, he kept us in the game, gave us 6 innings. I thought he was really sharp. Fastball, changeup, command worked really, really well. And I think more than anything, it was great for him, great for us just to get him back on the mound.
Craig, you guys, when you look at where you are with runs as a team, pretty high. How do you feel the bullpen is doing, though, because there are some games that you're losing leads?
Yeah, I mean, I think generally we've protected leaves quite well. Obviously, this morning it's easy to talk about last night's game, but when we have a lead and we get the ball to guys like Whitlock and Slayton and Chapman, and there are others who are starting to emerge, we feel pretty good. You know, and I think that's a credit to those guys. It's the usage and keeping them fresh, and it's our starters being able to pitch deep into games.
Craig, you guys are two games over 500, and Wiggy brings up last night, it was a close one there. You've had some close games, but a majority of them have been either you guys have crushed a team or a team has crushed you guys. What do you attribute to that disparity between leads and losses?
Disparity. Yes.
Disparity.
Yes.
Yeah, I think there was our offense was such that to your point, we either scored a bunch of runs or it seemed like we didn't score any at all. I think there's been a consistency over the last couple of weeks where we're seeing what we're capable of, which is scoring runs in bunches. We've got guys that can get on base and run, and then the middle of the order that can hit the ball out of the park. And then we need to add some consistency to the rotation, and hopefully we can get guys like Tanner back on track. And Crochet has been pretty consistently really, really good. Bueller's been really good his last turns through, getting healthy and getting Bayo back and Giolito back. I think we believe going into the season that we should have an offense that was capable of putting up runs in bunches. And then I think the other thing is the defense has stabilized over the last couple of weeks. And that was something that we were not particularly proud of early on in the season.
Speaking of the defense, a guy that you brought in, Alex Bregman, to solidify that as third in the American League in hits, has been hitting the cover off the ball lately. I'm curious, Alex was very public, Alex Cora, in his desire to pursue Bregman. Did he convince you? How did that work this offseason that you guys ended up getting Bregman in here?
Yeah, no, I think when you have an opportunity to bring in a great player like Alex is, then you want to be as aggressive as you can in doing so. What Alex Cora had was a relationship with Bregman and experience with the type of leadership and influence he can have on the clubhouse. That's something that obviously we couldn't have been as familiar with, but in terms of evaluating the player, we saw that he was such a great fit given the profile, given the defense, and then the way that Alex could speak to and I realize how confusing it is when we're talking about two Alexes, the way that Alex Cora could speak to just the positive leadership and impact that he could have, so there was no convincing. It was more a matter of Alex Cora being able to endorse all of those things, and then our needing to be aggressive while also being responsible and patient to see if we could bring these things together.
Craig, during my lead this morning, talked a little bit about Aaron Judge standing up for Jarren Duran and talking about how fans at times can step over the line with the things that they say, having a little bit of time to reflect on what happened during that situation and in general. Do you feel like there's something that Major League Baseball needs to do? Or is this, was the same kind of thing happening when you were playing? Where are you at it currently with fans?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, of course, what the fan did in Cleveland was completely unacceptable. We recognize that. The Guardians recognize that. And Major League Baseball recognizes that. I think Jarren, in his comments, talked about how he felt supported and he has the resources behind him, which is fantastic. And every situation that arises like this is a reminder of how important it is to bring this conversation about mental health and mental health struggles into the open, but also how much work there is to do, because it's very clearly still stigmatized. And so do I think that there are things that Major League Baseball can do and individual teams can do? Like, of course, there's always more that we can do, but to see players stand up for each other, I thought was really, really powerful, but especially a player who is as accomplished and visible as Aaron is.
Craig, I know that you were asked yesterday about guys like Marcelo Meyer and Roman Anthony and when they're going to get called up, and you said that it's a balancing act. Do you think that we will see them with the Red Sox this season?
I hate to put timelines on these things because I don't think it's fair to the players. I don't think it's fair to the organization, but Marcelo, Roman, and others are really talented players that we think are going to have a significant impact on our Major League team. Exactly when that is really
hard to know, but those guys have clear development goals that they're working through. They're making a ton of progress, and when the opportunity is right for them to impact our team, they'll be here.
Craig, I know it's still early in the season, but Casas continues to struggle. When do you as an organization start to feel like, okay, we might have to figure out what plan B is?
Yeah, we want to put the best team on the field that we possibly can, the one that gives us the best chance of winning games. And I think we've seen some signs from Tristan that things could be trending in the right direction over the last week and a half or so. It seems like there have been some in-game performance that has been encouraging, whether it's a couple hits the other night, a couple home runs on the homestand, but more than that, just about being on time and getting his best swing off, not allowing hittable pitches to pass by in the strike zone. We've seen some more of that, and so we're encouraged. But at the same time, our job is to put the best team on the field that we possibly can.
I want to give you the opportunity before you go to call me stupid. So we were talking earlier about the Dodgers, and some of us were complaining and were wildly concerned that this team is going to spend way over the cap and it's unfair to everybody else, and they are basically 500 their last 20 games. So is that are we stupid for worrying about that?
I think the Dodgers are a really good team, and I think that will bear out throughout the season. They're a little bit banged up, and but it's true that the amount of money that you spend is not the perfect proxy for how good a team you're going to have, and that's baseball, and there's a ton of variance. Now, given that we play 162 games, for the most part, the best teams end up on top at the end of the season, so I think it's probably premature to characterize any teams at this point.
Craig, when do you have a pretty good understanding of your team? Is there a benchmark? Is there a number of games analytic-wise that you can say that you have an understanding? How many of these do we have to play before you see what the problems may be?
I think some of it depends on the track records of the players. We saw Bregman make a handful of errors in the first couple of weeks of the season and felt like that's not something that we expect to continue. And, it largely hasn't. And, you look at the start that Rafi got off to and figured like this guy is just too talented for this to continue. And he's hit the ball really, really hard over the last couple of days, and he's impacting games now with the bat. So a little bit of that depends on how much information you have going into this, but like I think at least a third of the season is reasonable to then start to draw some conclusions about. And it's not necessarily like what your team is, but it could be opportunities to improve, where you start to see some diminished depth, when you start to think about what you might want to do as the trade deadline approaches.
What does the analytics say about how many times you can straight steal home plate?
Undefined. there's as many times as you get guys on third, I guess. But no, what an exciting couple days, and Jaren's obviously in particular. And I think it's a glimpse into the type of impact he can have on a game. And he's struggling a little bit going into that Cleveland series, particularly struggling against lefties, had a bunch of hits, got on base, and we saw that what that could do to defenses.
Well, that's one area where you guys have really done a good job is with your speed on the base paths. It's interesting because you talk about guys having a track record. For a guy like Casas, who doesn't really have much of a track record, how difficult is it to stay patient knowing that you're just looking at like, oh, he could have some good swings, or he's hitting the ball hard, even though he's not putting it into play? It has to be difficult to stay patient with a guy that you're starting to maybe just see some things that might not be leading to hits.
Yeah, and so we try to focus on some of the underlying process and make sure that the work day to day is good and that we're seeing encouraging signs. But of course, it's hard to stay patient. It's hard to stay patient for all of us, Tristan included, because we tend to want to react to what we saw in last night's game. And baseball's just, the nature of baseball and the baseball season is such that that's not the best approach here, but that doesn't make it any easier.
All right, Craig, thanks for taking the time. We will talk to you again next week or whenever.
Sounds good. Thanks.
All right. That is Craig Breslow, Chief Baseball Officer of the Boston Red Sox, Red Sox Front Office Report. We will get to Hill Notes coming up next. right now. Courtney, and what is trending this hour?
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now brought to you by Shaw's. Something to keep an eye out for this morning when it comes to the Patriots. Drake May scheduled to speak around 11:45 this morning. It's the first time we'll hear from him since January.
Are they back at OTAs now?
Yeah.
All right. Is that because today is May Day?
Oh,
that could be it.
I like it.
Kind of brilliant marketing there. Courtney. Wow.
All right. And when is Cinco de Mayo?
He doesn't get to speak. No longer for him. Okay. Where is he? Nobody knows.
And I did that annoying thing again where I combined disparity and disparaging.
Yes, you did.
Double word.
Yeah.
There
is quite a disparity in those two, the meanings of those two words.
Yeah.
The Courtney eyes when Greg corrects during an interview.
Oh, she doesn't like it. I try to do it so carefully.
Nobody would have picked up on it if you just let it go.
Disparity.
Were you watching the text line? People were like, disparity.
I don't get the text line anymore.
Yeah, I didn't notice it, but then again. Right. That's me.
Disparity. Okay, thank you, Shime. Yeah, I know you'll play it all the time. The Red Sox dropped one of the Blue Jays in 10 innings. 7-6, your final from Toronto. Lucas Giolito went 6 innings, giving up 3 runs on 5 hits while striking out 7 in his return. Another one with the Blue Jays tonight. 7:07, first pitch with Tanner Houck taking the mound. You can listen to the game right here on EEI. Join Will Fleming on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Kick things off with Christian Arcan at 6:07 for the MassMutual pregame show. And there were some NBA playoff games last night. The Timberwolves beat the Lakers to move out of the first round. The Rockets keep their series alive, beating the Warriors, and Golden State leads that series 3-2. NHL playoff games last night. The Jets go up one game on the Blues. The Panthers take round one against the Lightning, and the Capitals move on, beating the Canadiens in 5 games. And that was brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market. Perfecting the art of fresh, the 99-cent sale is back. Pick up participating items at Shaw's and Star Market for just 99 cents by the pound. I don't know. Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network. That's what's trending. Here's Curtis with your weather.
Thank you, Courtney. 55 degrees, mostly sunny skies. Afternoon high, 67.
WEEI Afternoons. This is quite a... Ted Johnson would like this song. It's all about Texas. This is Trevor Story's walk-up song, and it's catchy. We need to go to the phone lines now, as we do each and every Wednesday, for our interview with Alex Cora. Red Sox manager Alex Cora is brought to you on WEEI Afternoons by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. How we doing this week, Alex? And I have to start it off with that catch we saw from Dalton Varsho last night in center field was one of the strangest and greatest I've ever seen. Have you ever seen anything quite like that?
I don't want to say greatest. It was the strangest one. yeah. Good reaction. Good athlete, man. Like, we saw him falling down, and everybody thought, okay, inside the park. And then somehow, some way, he moved his body, and he got it, you know. So it was a good one.
Yeah, it reminded me of the fat kid in Little League who falls down in right field, but then he's so athletic, he catches the ball anyway. It was like a really unathletic and athletic play all at once.
He was. But, as soon as when he fell down, we were like, oh, here we go now, you know, inside the Parker, but no, it didn't happen.
Yeah, just like he probably practices in the Blue Jays, drew it up. And by the way, Andy, as the former fat kid in right field, I wish I could have fallen down and made that play. So, Alex, quick question regarding offense and defense and the pitching in general. What has been more impressive or encouraging to you, 30 runs scored over the last 3 games or your team only giving up 8 runs allowed over those same 3 games?
I think the pitching part of it, we know we're going to hit. Obviously, you know, as you guys know, we consider ourselves an offensive club, you know. But if we do the other two pillars of the game, if we're consistent, we're going to be okay. And that's pitching and defense. And I think overall, the last 10 games have been solid, you know, defensively as far as positioning, and it's paying off. And when you do that, you start playing consistent baseball, and that's when you start, stacking up wins.
Alex, in the early part of the season, we asked you about strikeouts. You said you don't like them, but at some point, maybe you have to accept they're part of your DNA, but you need the power that goes with it. Last night was a game with five strikeouts, five home runs. The power is starting to come around. Is that something you've been very happy to see develop over the last few days?
No, it was good to see. And as you guys know, every team is different, right? We play Cleveland, who, you know, they change speeds. They don't have too many big fastballs. So we put the ball in play over the weekend. Yesterday was a challenge. You know, that kid last year, he had his way against us. You know, we didn't hit the ball hard. We struck out a lot. And, you know, from pitch three, right, Jaron gets on top of the fastball. He's a homer. Alex gets a split later on. He's out of the ballpark. And it just continued, right? It was like that snowball effect. And the at-bats got better. We're taking our walks, too, which is very important, right? And we had traffic all the time. And little by little, we start hitting with many scoring position, and that's where the fun starts.
WEI Afternoon, speaking with Red Sox manager Alex Cora. So Garrett Crochet struggled a little bit, you know, relative to his excellent season thus far. Yeah. Over his he's been – no, make no mistake, he's been awesome thus far, Alex, but struggled a little bit in his previous two starts. What did you see that led him to be more effective and back to form last night in Toronto?
I think it's a command was better. He struggled at home, those first two innings and the last one, right, on the day game. It's one of those that you get into another guy, and his stuff was good but not precise. And yesterday, even with the walks, there was one that the pitch was right down the middle, and they called it a ball, and the other two part of the game, right? But he was in the attack. He was able to control the cutter, throw for strikes, and he was able to expand against the lefty. So it was a good one for him.
Our buddy Lou Maloney retweeted something today about Garrett Crochet's arm angle and how it's changed in recent years. Just wondering, is that something you guys have focused on, his arm angle? Is that just in general, what is the importance of arm angles with pitchers? As fans, should we pay attention to those types of things?
Well, I mean, this is the first time I heard about it, so I'll dig in into it. But I'm not aware of that, to be honest with you.
Okay, so that's good that I wasn't aware of it either. I feel better when the manager wasn't really fixated on it too.
The way it should be, for sure. So it's been a while, obviously, Alex, but Lucas Giolito is scheduled to make his major league debut for the Red Sox tonight. What do you expect from the big right-hander, and how's he looking?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the numbers in the rehab assignment weren't great. He walked a lot of people. Hopefully the case tonight is like it's the big stage, it's the big leagues, and he's going to be able to pound the strike zone. That's the most important thing. The most important thing, let's be honest, you know, he's back, you know, and he's going to be a big part of what we're trying to accomplish, regardless of the results today. He can go two innings and struggle, or he can go seven and then be great. And the fact that he's going to be in our rotation and we know what he's capable of doing is very important for us. And he has a great support system here. We're going to help him with everything that we can. And hopefully it's a good one tonight, but, you know, it doesn't dictate what's going to happen the rest of the season.
In recent years, there's been times when base running wasn't necessarily a strength of your baseball team, but stealing bases, stealing home, taking extra bases. There was the Campbell play the other day on the bobbled ball at the mound where he takes home, makes it with a great slide. How impressed have you been, or happy have you been with the way your team is running the bases, and how important is that for the way you guys succeed offensively?
No, it's important because not every day you're going to hit five homers, right? There's going to be times that you're going to be struggling offensively, and you know, you take a walk, you steal second, grumble the second, you advance the runner, and then attack fly, and you score the run, and you might win it 1-0. And it's a different personnel, you know, more athletic, and the guys have done an amazing job being efficient running the bases. It's not just steal bases just for the hell of it, right? You have to be efficient, and they've been doing an outstanding job taking advantage of situations. KC did it in Cleveland, Romy did the same thing, and obviously Jaron still in the plate over there. So very happy with the way guys are doing, have been running the bases this season.
Well, it's unfortunate that we would have to speak of this again in anything less than an inspirational light, but there was that unfortunate incident over the weekend with Jaron Duran and that fan in Cleveland, who many of us hope never gets a chance to go see a professional baseball game again. But more importantly, Alex, have you had a conversation with Jaron about getting engaged with fans, not taking the bait, and how to potentially handle situations like this, which unfortunately could come up again?
No, we've been talking about this for the last few years, right? And you guys have seen him react in different ways, right? He started in Kansas City 3 or 4 years ago. He did it last year. Obviously, this one was a lot different, right? But it's something that, as a group, we exposed ourselves to the world, right, on the Netflix documentary, right? So they know a lot about us. And, you know, in different stadiums, we're going to hear it, right? And, you know, it's on us to control ourselves. It's on us to actually support each other. And I tell you what, you know, he has a big group surrounding him, a very positive one, and he's in a good stage.
Is there a fine line there, though, with a guy like Duran, who is obviously your leadoff hitter, can be the key point to starting the offense off any inning, any game? He's aggressive. He has a certain strong personality. You don't want to take away parts of his personality, right? Is that a fine line to walk with him?
No. Yeah, I mean, we want him to be as aggressive as possible. You know, don't change who you are. You know, it's just a matter of we got to help him in every aspect, right? We learned a lot last year. We're learning a lot this year. And like I said before, you know, our support system for him is on point, you know, from the clubhouse to the coaches to the organization. And we're going to do everything possible to help him and keep him on the field.
So Red Sox manager Alex Cora here with WEEI Afternoons. So Alex, obviously expectations must have been reasonably high for Christian Campbell because you guys promoted him over Marcelo Meyer and Roman Anthony to the major league roster. And I just wonder if he has even beyond exceeded expectations to this point, because he's now slowly becoming, or rather quickly becoming, one of the more dynamic right-handed bats and offensive presences in the American League. And he's just a baby, and he's only played 32, 33 Major League Baseball games thus far.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch and refreshing. How can I put it? I think being young and not knowing what's going on, it actually helps him out, right? Everything is a first, right? From playing here in Toronto, in Canada, to, you know, playing in Arlington under the roof and playing at Fenway Park. So it's a lot of new stuff for him. There's a lot of teaching, a lot of player development. I think as an organization, we understand that we have to stay on top of him because experience, he's not his, right? He's only played one full season, you know, as a professional player. He didn't play that much in college. So there's a lot of new stuff that he's seen and he's reacting to it. But, man, it's amazing. That ball he hit yesterday in right field, the way it sounded, you know, we were in the dugout and it sounded so loud, and we had no doubt that ball was going to go out. Then he pulls the ball over the third baseman. The base runner, he's a good one. We got to work on defense. That's our challenge because, as you guys know, the speed of the game here is different than in the minor leagues. And we have to make sure we slow it down for him. But so far, man, a month in the big leagues, A+ for him. He's been amazing.
Christian is the first of the big three, obviously makes the club out of spring training. The other two have been hot as heck at various points in Worcester. Marcelo Meyer was the International League Player of the Week. What are the conversations like with you and Craig Breslow and the organization? You know, those guys look like they're ready to play in the big leagues, although right now I'm not sure there's obvious spots for them to play for your club. What are those conversations like about when, if, how you get those guys to the big leagues?
Yeah, so now just looking at the metrics, what they're doing, you know, not everything is hitting 330 or slugging 500, you know. There's other stuff that we take a look at it. From my end, honestly, you know, I got 26 kids here that have to take care of it. And also, yeah, paying attention to what's going on in AAA, not only with them, but with others. But as an organization, we're in a good spot, to be honest with you. You know, we're playing better up here. We got some guys that can help us throughout the season in the minor league. So, you know, it's a good time to be a Red Sox.
And now a fifth of the way through the season, a month in, what grade would you give the 20% in to the season? What grade would you give yourself and the Red Sox thus far, Alex?
Myself, I always give myself an A, bro. You know, just kidding. Just kidding. I think we've been like We've been okay. I don't want to give us a grade. I think if you look around the division, that's the most important thing, right? And we're in the middle of things. We're playing better baseball. Like I said in spring training, and I said it during the show when we were in Texas for the opening series, you know, I'm not going to say, oh, we're going to the World Series. Are we going to win it? Our goal is to keep getting better each and every day. And I think the defense is getting better. Pitching is doing the same thing. And offensively, we're hitting a stride. So let's keep rolling, keep stacking up days, and see where it takes us.
Before I let you go, I know it's too early to look at the standings, but we look at the standings every day, and I look, and it's Yankees-Red Sox. Does this feel like maybe it could be evolving into one of those years where we get back to the classic Red Sox-Yankees rivalry atop the division? I mean, even last night, I look up, they started before you guys. They hit four home runs in the first inning. You go out and hit home runs in the first, second, third inning, hit five overall. Just feels like maybe we're on a little collision course for a classic Red Sox-Yankees season.
Well, from our end, hopefully, you know, we're colliding with somebody in September. You know, we haven't done it the last 3 or 4 years, and our goal is to play meaningful games in September. They have a good club, man. They're really good at what they do. Their pitching is always solid. You know, Toronto has a good rotation. They're struggling offensively right now. In Baltimore, they're being banged up as far as like health, right? And Tampa, you know, they're still doing their thing. So we got to concentrate on Toronto, win the series here, and keep rolling. And if that's the case, so be it. I know Mr. Manfred will love that.
All right, Alex, appreciate you joining us as you do every Wednesday here on WEEI Afternoons. Good luck tonight, and hopefully you keep hitting the ball out of the ballpark. That makes it easy.
See you guys next week.
Thanks, Alex.
Okay, see you then, Alex. Thank you.
That is the self-proclaimed A manager of the Boston Red Sox. He's done a great job. I'm with him. If you're going to ask me to grade myself, I'm going to grade myself high, right? Like, you got to look out for number one. You got to promote
yourself. Give myself an A, bro. Right? That was the line of the year, right? From Cora.
Although, I'll be honest with you, that's the early season optimistic Cora. I think there's some conversations I've had with him in recent years in like August, early September. The team's fading a little bit where he might have been a little bit more of a difficult grader on himself.
A realist. But that's it. He knows they haven't even played their best baseball. Not even close. But like a bunch of things are going in the right direction and trending in that very same direction recently. And it's nice to hear him feeling it without getting overconfident. Now, look, we could be a Giolito and a Hauk batting practice start away from going, here we go.
We're not going there. It's optimism here. We talked to the manager. The team is hitting.
Right,
the team is
right.
Pitching. The team is running. They're playing some defense. We'll talk about that next. We'll react to Alex Cora and some of what he had to say with us here on WEEI Afternoons.
Jones and Keefe
on WEEI.
Download the Odyssey app and listen on demand anytime.
Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. We're brought to you by Jackson Lumber and Millwork. You can visit Jackson Lumber and Millwork for all your residential remodeling or commercial building materials and supplies. Jackson Lumber and Millwork, providing solutions and delivering results since 1946. Tomorrow at 11:30, you can catch the Friday four-pack, a four-pack of questions, some about sports, some not. Who knows where they're going to go? So plan for that tomorrow at 11:30. Coming up about 15 minutes from now, you'll hear from Patriots quarterback Drake May, scheduled to speak live at 11:45. You'll hear it here on WEEI, and we'll go back on the clock. If you missed our plans for Bill to break up with Jordan, we'll play those for you again at high noon. But joining us right now on Jones and Keefe, as he does every Thursday at 11:30, Rob Bradford, Baseball Isn't Boring, and WEEI.com. He's brought to you by McFarlane Energy, the heating, cooling, and bioheat delivery pros that Eastern Mass and all of Cape Cod depend on, McFarlaneEnergy.com. By the E.L. Harvey Companies, including Nauset Disposal and Miga Disposal, your local trash collection and recycling providers, and by Aviva Trattoria, Italian-inspired, locally made from fresh, whole, locally sourced ingredients. Rob Bradford, how are we doing this week?
Oh, I'm so good. I love Toronto. McFarlane to you all. I'm staring at the CN Tower. You ever been up there?
No.
Big tower
no.
in Toronto?
I've been to Toronto. No? I've never been to the top of the tower, no.
Are you guys heights guys? Are you
no.
scared of
no,
heights?
Not
For
my
sure
favorite.
Not. No.
Yeah, not my favorite. No.
No, well, they have like the glass floor thing where, I mean, it just freaks you out. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Terrifying.
No.
Listen,
terrifying. No.
What
I
listen, you get.
Would I probably survive?
Look,
would I probably survive walking out on the glass floor? Maybe, but there's no reason to find out. It's like, would I probably survive jumping out of a plane, parachuting down? Maybe, but I don't want to find out. So, Bradfo, we found out about the Red Sox in the first month of the year. through April, how would you grade the Red Sox to this point? Two games over 500, game and a half out of first.
I would say a B minus. You know, I give their documentary a C plus. I'll give them a B minus. I think that the American League, as we have proclaimed and defined, it kind of stinks. They're fortunate in that respect. I think there's two teams more than 5.5 games out right now in all of the American League. The Red Sox, you go through three straight games of 30 runs in three games, and then you go through the first five innings of last night, and they can't be stopped. Everything's coming together. That's what you're screaming from the mountaintops, and then, boom, it sort of collapses. So it's sort of a microcosm, right? I mean, we think that they're pretty good, like last night. We think they're pretty good. But then there's that unexpected hiccup. Before it was Devers or Cassis, and last night it was Whitlock. And, yeah, so I think that they're just as talented. Here's the thing, guys. Like, they're just as talented as any team in the American League. So I guess that's a pretty good starting point as we head into May.
What did you think of Lucas Giolito making his Sox debut last night? And then what did you think of the decision to roll him back out there for the sixth inning?
Yeah, he was obviously really good. I saw him in the last rehab outing in Worcester. He was not good. He had six walks through three innings, and it was just not good. And then he just flipped the script, started throwing 96, and he was nails. And in terms of the decision, I got it. It sort of unraveled pretty quick. You know, he was pretty low in his pitch count. And now, I know it was his first outing out, but still, his pitch count and the rehab assignments have been pretty up there. And then you get two outs in the sixth. You get 0-2 on Springer, you walk him. Then you get 0-2 on the next guy, and you give up a home run on an 0-2 pitch. And then, so again, like, it's sort of unraveled in a hurry, and you're still up 6-3, and you figure that they're going to be able to hold it because Whitlock's been really good, and it just doesn't work out. But I do think that was a pretty big takeaway from last night. If they can get that to Giolito, that's something.
I want to focus in on the 10th inning, bottom of the 10th. Vladdy Jr. is the ghost runner at second base. Rafaela catches a pop-up. Vlad advances to third. The throw hits him. Maybe it would have got him, maybe not. But Nesson kind of honed in on this after the game, that maybe Rafaela wasn't fully prepared, wasn't fully ready, which is why Vladdy went on that play. What do you think happened? Did anything jump out to you in the 10th inning? And the reason I ask, Rafaela's out there for his defense. He's only hitting .213. So if there are brain farts out there defensively, could there be another move coming at some point from Worcester? But what went down in the 10th?
There's a lot going on there. Is there a half a brain fart? Is this such a half a brain fart? Because I think that's kind of what that was. Rafaela, you know, his batting average has been down, but he's actually one of the better ones with runners in scoring position for a team that's not doing very well in that respect. Defensively, he's good, but you're absolutely right. On that play, I noticed that he hadn't really – I think that Vlad absolutely caught him by surprise and wasn't the no doubt about it, Sedan Rafaela, I'm going to get you at third, I'm going to get you at home throw, no question. Now, I think it would have got him if it didn't hit him, but still, you know, that was not probably the best moment of giving an example of how good a fielder this guy is. And in terms of who's getting sent up or sent down – you know, he's not, the Anthony thing isn't happening like right now. It's just not happening. And we can focus on that play with Rafaela. But if you look over the last week, he's certainly been more part of the solution than part of the problem. So we're just going to have to, it's a bizarre dynamic, guys. It is. Because you have two guys who, in Anthony and Meyer, who are ready. I mean, they are ready, except for, you know, Anthony obviously being banged up with a foot thing. But they are ready to play. But there isn't an easy answer in terms of, as up and down as this team is, there isn't an easy answer in terms of they're coming up and they're playing every day right now.
Well, it's funny because Alex Cora was on yesterday talking to Hart and Fitzy, and he was saying, you know, they were asking him the same kind of ideas about these young guys, and he's like, well, it's a really good time to be, you know, a Red Sox. And it's like, yeah, for the guys at the major league level, like, you can't just say, like, hey, Marcelo, this is a good problem for us to have. Like, I'm wondering, like, what kind of communication do those guys have? Or it's sort of like, there's really nothing to say. Like, the team right now is pretty healthy and, you know, could be better, but certainly could be a lot worse. They have guys that deserve to be playing more. So it's just really a holding pattern, right? But, like, what kind of communication do they have?
Well, you guys know Marcelo Meyer as good as anyone, right?
Yeah, so we're all best friends, yeah. Yeah,
exactly. But I think that it's those guys. You heard it coming out of spring training, didn't you? where Marcelo Meyer, it hurt it with you guys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, he wants to be on the team.
I think I should be on the team. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, you get off to a little bit of a slow start because I think you were a little starstruck from talking to you guys for a couple of weeks. But then he goes on this tear and leads like the world in RBIs down there. And Anthony, we all know what he's doing. But I think that they just understand the situation right now. Now, here's the thing: is like when you get either deep in the season or certainly into next season, it becomes a different situation. I mean, you just can't have guys tearing it up like they are. I mean, and not using them. And that's what Cora keeps saying, right? He keeps saying, like, these guys are going to help us. These guys are going to help us. All right, well, we'll find out because they don't want to bring him up and not play him. And so it is a weird situation, particularly because they're not just top prospects. They're top prospects who are actually playing really, really well. Mm-hmm. So good for Worcester. You know, the Worcester Hawks, they're the big winners.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah.
Brad Folk, Cora was also asked yesterday about Jaren Duran and his response to fans. We've seen him mix it up time and again with fans over the years. I think this one's probably the most justifiable, given the reprehensible comments from the fans in Cleveland. But are they concerned at all about how much over the years? Starting in Kansas City, you saw it in the Netflix special, The Clubhouse. He was mixing it up in Seattle. Last year, he was suspended for a couple of games for yelling at a fan, and now this. Are they concerned with that element of Jaren Duran?
No, because I think that, to be honest with you, I think he's handled it pretty well. I mean, this is, you knew that the Netflix thing happened. You put yourself out there. I think 99% was positive, and we all talked about it, and we all heard about it. But, you know, then you have this one idiot who does this. And you know, I think all you need to know in terms of what an outlier that idiot is look at the reaction of the fans around him. I mean, that's in Cleveland. This wasn't like the cool kids at the lunch table saying, oh, yeah, you get him, you tell him. No, everyone was like, no, this is an idiot, and here he is, and kick him out. So I do think that that was a little bit of an outlier, and you know, I think he hasn't handled it very well. And I do know this. It's like, this isn't a fake thing, man, like Jaren Duran, in terms of getting behind like this cause and this message and all that, and really trying to help people, whether it's going out and signing autographs after every single day and talking to people without even people knowing about it, like all of that. So I think that he's handled it pretty well. And by the way, he's played really, really well in the last week or so, which is hugely important to this team.
Where are we at now on Tristan Casas? He had two hits on Tuesday. He was 0-for-2 last night, two more strikeouts. He has been walking a little bit more as of late, still hitting, I think it's a .181 on the season. So what's the Casas outlook right now?
It feels like he's keeping his head above water just enough to not have everyone go full Roman Anthony at first base, which isn't going to happen,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or someone else at first base. But at the same time, they pinch hit for him, right? They pinch hit for him last night with Roman Gonzalez. I don't think that he has reached, even with a couple hits in the last couple days, he reached the point where they're like, oh, there he is. He's ready to go on the run right now. So I thought that was pretty notable. I mean, I think, you know, Romy's played pretty well. But he isn't the guy who is absolutely going to be your everyday first baseman. He's a guy who can produce in particular spots, and he has. But this, I thought that was pretty telling because in years past, they said, hey, you go, Tristan. Go get him. Lefty, remember, I mean, this is their cleanup hitter at the end of the year, and you're already pinch hitting for him. So, again, keeping his head above water just enough now, but they still going to get better from him.
Pinch hitting for him. He's batting seventh. He's hitting .181. Rob Bradford, WEEI.com. Baseball Isn't Boring podcast. Check it out on the Odyssey app. And check him out every Thursday here on Jones and Keefe. Bradford, we appreciate it. Thanks so much.
All right, guys. Keep up the good work. I'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Rob Bradford is all our guests joining us here on Jones and Keefe. We got Drake May live from Foxborough. You want to hear from the Patriots quarterback? You'll hear it here on Jones and Keefe next.
Oh and one, two down, bottom nine, the pitch. High pop-up should do it. Into shallow left field, Story goes out. In comes Duran, and fittingly, it's Jaren to make the play. The human spark plug puts it away, and the Red Sox win it today, 13-3. They take 2 of 3 in Cleveland. A good start from Bayo. They head north of the border with a ton of momentum.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
WEEI Afternoons in our Brighton studios. Another beautiful day. These mornings have been unbelievable, guys. Like, we've turned a corner.
I think spring's finally here.
Spring, summer's around the corner.
Watch out. Don't jinx it, guys. We're not officially there. Could be a spell. You never know. Sometimes we've had some of them May showers, so watch it.
So we had the tease before the break, and we all know that host 101 is you're going to pay off the tease, right, Dan Ball? So the question is, Marcelo Meyer, International League Player of the Week, he's raking. Roman Anthony had an x-ray, negative. He'll be fine, but he has been hot like a toddy for much of the minor league baseball season. You got two guys that feel like they need to be in the big leagues. And yet the question is, where do they play? Who do you sit? Where do they fit? So Fitzy, answer the question, jerk.
What? You want what? The question, jerk. I don't know. I mean, this is not just an Alex Cora question. This is now also a Brez question, a Kennedy question, an organizational question. Do we start the clock in these kids now, or do we let them just start? Have they now tapped into their talent so much that they're forcing the conversation and forcing their hand? Are they better served in Worcester now, raking and dominating, or would they be better served coming up and playing, what, two games a week? I think you probably want them playing every day to build up their baseball stamina, correct?
That's my answer. I think right now they belong in Worcester. They belong playing every night. They belong raking. They belong feeling good and prepping
How do you do that for, you know, and not get called up and then still stay engaged and have your edge? I just think there's a point in which, as a player, you're like, okay, I've been knocking the cover off the ball here for a long time, and I'm still not getting called up. I mean, how much? And then that would, I don't know, as from a psychological standpoint, I could see that kind of almost, all right, I don't know, taking some of the fire and the sting away for you.
Well, especially for Marcelo Meyer, who I believe it was with Jones and Keefe on opening day out at Polar Park, kind of voiced his disappointment and said he belonged to be in the big league. Yeah. Like, he expected to be in the big league.
He belonged on the major league roster. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. And I love that swag.
I do too, as long as it doesn't become in any way counterproductive, or like you're kind of insinuating, Ted, do you become
complacent?
Yeah. Do you lose your edge? Yeah. Now all of a sudden you're in a slump, and it's like, well, now I can't bring you up because you're in a slump. We don't want you up until you get back to raking. So
if Roman Anthony's not playing first base and he's going to be an outfielder, I mean, what do you like? Jaron Duran's not going anywhere and left. I mean, that's Cora's like been saying that forever.
Yeah.
So it's either center field or right field.
And Rafaela, for a while, people were talking about Rafaela was struggling. Maybe that's an opportunity. And
not in the field, but at the bat.
Now he's hot
as can be. He's gone streaking now.
Yeah, now he's batting. I think Dan Ball said last 7 days he's batting over 300. He had the 5 RBI. Like, he's having a great run here. And they gave him that extension last year. They want him to be this dynamic center fielder who can be a little bit of a spark plug at the bottom of the lineup. So I think this is a little bit like Fitzy when we say, well, you got six pitchers. You're going to have to go to a six-man rotation. These things tend to play themselves out. And I don't want to jinx anybody, but I'm just saying, Trevor Story doesn't have the most consistent history of being available. Like, your guy Bregman is available, but he's not the youngest guy. Like, these things tend to play themselves out. You overanalyze. Don't force it. I guess that would be don't force it. It's a long season, and take it where it comes.
Or somebody should probably remind Willie Abreu that he should be renting.
Oh, now we're taking shots at Willie Abreu. You know the funny name
Hey, you're a good ball player, but we got it. We have more people that can do what you do and potentially better. So
Need Mason Miller. So you might look better in green than blue and red.
It always comes back to him.
Story and Abreu for Miller. I'd do it in a heartbeat.
I'll do Slayton Abreu and something else.
I'll even throw in a gently used Yoshida if you'll take that contract off the books. And there's no chance that the Oakland A's would do that, or Sacramento A's, where the hell they are now. Because I think he's also a funny name, Dan Ball. No one talks about Yoshida. A $20 million DH.
No, it's incredible.
Who is just out of sight, just out of
chilling,
mind.
Just chilling, collecting his money.
Good life.
Not doing anything.
Yes, Dan Ball.
It's funny you say that nobody talks about him. I saw the use of the Jordan meme of "we're not talking about that." Somebody put the quote of, "so what's going on with Masataka Yoshida?" And the response was the picture of "we're not talking about that."
We're not talking about this.
So we don't talk about. Let me get this straight. The pecking order is we don't talk about Bruno, and we don't talk about how Belichick and Jordan met. Is that correct, Dan?
Nope. Yep.
That is correct.
Let's go to the phone line, 617-779-7937. Rob in Swampscott wants to talk about this question with no answer. What do you do with Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer? What's up, Rob?
How you doing, fellas? I agree that you can't force it, but let me just ask a general question. If you've got two young studs that are getting it done at the AAA level, and then you have somebody on your major league team who we might have had high expectations for, but has shown us, without a doubt, his bat is not consistent and his defense is skeptic. I mean, I'm trying to understand the love affair with Tristan Casas.
Yeah, I was wondering where you're going. Yeah.
All right, thanks for the call, Rob.
I was like, he's got to be talking about Casas.
I don't think there is a love affair, but there is a we don't have a plan B affair problem here. Like, there, again, if one of those two players played first base, I think they'd already be in the big leagues. They'd be playing for the Boston Red Sox every night.
It's crazy, though. This is also a team that had Kyle Schwarber playing first base.
Oh, yeah.
They're literally like, you know what? Can you just, I don't know, in some really important games, play a position you're really not comfortable playing for us a little bit? Like, I just think there's the perception is around here is that anybody can play first base.
Yeah, I kind of feel that way, too.
That's what it feels like.
You know who else said that? Will Middlebrooks. I believe his quote in, and I don't know if it was on Nesson or on WEEI's broadcast, was because he played third and then at times would be asked to play first. He considered it, quote, a night off because it was so much easier. He's like, you basically knock the ball down and then either touch first or lob the ball to the pitcher.
I mean, I'll be honest. That's, to me, is the spot. Like, why are they, if they're reluctant to play Roman Anthony at first?
Because those guys are so good at their other positions, their long-term positions, of value. Yeah. And you don't want to screw with a young player and although
and you don't want to
I think that would really screw with him, having him take a couple reps at first.
I don't, but I just don't know that it's worth it. And again, I don't know that you need to force it yet. Maybe you'd start to get desperate if you were not the Rockies, but if you were like 10-20 right now, but you're two games above 500, you're in second place.
They can,
like,
do it.
Just extend it. Yeah. Long play it, see what happens. We have some breaking news here, Stiz, on WEEI Afternoon, so roll it.
This is breaking news. Breaking news on WEEI is presented by the BetMGM Network. For all your betting needs, check out the newly rebranded BetMGM Network on the Odyssey app or locally on WEEI AM 850.
The writing was on the wall on day three of the NFL draft. The purge of longtime Patriots continues, Ted Johnson. According to Mike Reese, the Patriots have informed veteran long snapper Joe Cardona that they are releasing him, per sources, had been the team's longest tenured player, and they drafted long snapper Julian Ashby out of Vanderbilt in the seventh round this past weekend.
That?
So Joe Cardona, we've talked about the David Andrews, the Juwan Bentleys, the different leaders, captains that have been released. Now Joe Cardona, the longest tenured Patriot, Navy man, a guy who had been a spokesman and their long snapper well back into the Belichick days, is no longer with the team, according to Mike Reese. Reaction to this, is this just because he hasn't been great? If we're going to put all the facts on the table, over the last couple years, there's been a few more errant snaps in some games. But do you think this is a physical thing, or is this another cleanse?
It's a cleanse, and it's also a money thing. Like, the guy's going into his 11th year. And are you kidding me? I think he's probably close to...
He is the highest paid long snapper in the NFL.
I mean, at what, probably $3 million a year, $4 million a year, something, I think I heard. Are you kidding me?
It's a lot. But, you know, if you want some veteran stability, my question, Mike...
No. Long snapper?
$1.5 million a year.
How much?
$1.5 million.
Is that his salary or his cap number? Because I also thought...
Salary.
Yeah, the cap number is higher. I think he had some bonus money in there that pushes it higher.
Yeah.
But my question would be, for a team that looks like, or I think we all think they may play defense, probably not be the highest scoring offense as they figure things out, tight ball games, you have a rookie long snapper and a rookie kicker now. Any concerns with that? Is that a big deal, or is that just the cost of rebuilding business?
I could see that maybe being an issue. I do love the kicker pick. I'm not going to lie. I mean, they keep picking kickers. Hopefully, they'll get it right. But you know what? There might be something to that. But my guess is you don't draft a long snapper unless he's just money. unless he's just he's done it time and time again at the collegiate level. Mm-hmm. They protect these guys more than they ever did when I was playing. They don't even get hit, and they're not even expected to really make tackles on punt. And so I don't think it's that big of a deal, to be honest with you, Andy. I could see how you might go that direction, but I wouldn't be that concerned. I mean, if you're going to draft a long snapper, you've seen him make hundreds, if not thousands of snaps that were accurate and on point, and so you feel pretty good about him not being a liability.
Only in New England would we have breaking news that they're releasing a long snapper.
Joe Cardona!
I mean, he's been here 10 years.
I know
years.
It's Cardona, and around here, years. Like Lonnie Paxton, you become an absolute legend.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Do you guys know what round he was drafted in?
Joe Cardona?
Yeah.
Fourth.
Fifth. The fifth round.
Yeah. I knew it was a little higher.
Because he was a serviceman.
It was Bill's pick from the Navy.
And don't kid yourself. That's part of the purging.
Did you see the sweatshirt he was wearing during the interview on CBS? What did it say across the chest?
You know, it's interesting.
And Joe, please help me.
UNC.
Wasn't David Andrews and Joe Cardona there at Vrabel's introductory press
they
conference?
They were the only...
It's like the only two guys
there. They were the only
two
players there. It was. And I sat behind him. It was Joe. Absolutely.
Andy, I hate to say it, guys, but the captain's curse of 2024 is complete. No Every doubt. Single one of them is gone.
Okay, Ted, you were ahead of the curve.
No, there's
on
one. There's one left, right? Isn't Jabril Peppers or Kyle Duggar? Weren't their captains one of those guys?
Jabril Peppers was a captain until
he wasn't.
They made him not
he
a
was
captain.
Uncaptained.
So I think maybe.
So the C for cocaine was removed from the C from his chest. I'm not a cheap shot. It was in the police report. No, I'm just saying it.
It's out there.
It's out there. Yes, Dan Ball.
How long? Over under 1 month till Cardona is on the sideline at a UNC practice.
He's on his way now.
A week?
He's on his way now.
5 days?
Yeah. No, he'll be the ROTC coordinator or however that works down on the campus of North Carolina. No, I do just have a – so we're talking about margins here, Fitzy. I know you're a guy that thinks they could be a playoff team. You, Mina Kimes, and Kay Adams are all on the bandwagon for the playoffs. But – don't you think one game is going to decide this team's playoff fate in all likelihood? Like one game, maybe a field goal, maybe a snap, maybe mm-hmm. This is adding
the
a
margins,
layer.
Andy.
Yeah, this is adding a layer there that I don't know. I'm just saying it could be something we're discussing come November.
I feel you, but also I'm also feel pretty confident about our special teams coach. You know, so I think they're well coached.
Yeah. Isn't he?
He's the only holdover.
That,
yeah. He's the only holdover. So
he was also the only one that handled the end of the season well. If you remember, everybody was saying dumb stuff about Gerard and the coaching staff and their jobs. Yeah. And he handled
know your
it well.
Role. Shut your mouth. You suck. No, you suck more.
No, Jeremy Springer was like, we need to do that better. I always assume if people boo me, it's because we're not doing a very good job on the football field and we should probably be better. I was like, this guy kind of gets it, knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, you guys pay to see us perform and we didn't perform, so you have a right to be unhappy and we should do better. Like, also, super great interview, nice guy. And guess what? Andy, craziest thing happened. The unit that he coached improved from the previous season. How about that?
The damnedest thing. And Ted, I know you poo-poo this. I believe you poo-pooed this when David Andrews was cut, and I brought it up. Juwan Bentley, all these guys that are no longer here, the experienced guys. This is another guy who was sort of a talker, and I know he's the long snapper. It's a little different, but they would put him out at events. They would put him.
Oh, yeah.
There are a lot of mic flag opportunities available for players on this team. Will Campbell's going to be one of them at some point. If it's not year one, it's year two. Morgan Moses might be the O-line guy this year. He's clearly comfortable talking to the media. But
aren't we excited about that? It's been the same guys. No offense to those guys, but I mean, Bill identified the guys he wanted to talk.
Yeah.
And it was the same stuff. They never said, but they take all the answers. I mean, okay, but there's just no personality. They weren't fun guys to cover. Good football players, but can we get some personality on this team?
Okay, I like what you did there. You spun it on its ear and you turned it into a positive. New voices, new styles. I like what you did there.
Something new and different, man.
That's why I love Will Campbell.
Yeah,
well, how do you not love
that guy? Who's the defensive guy? Milton Williams? Is he going to be one? Robert Spillane? Is it
Spillane
just Gonzo?
Spillane seems like an Spillane. Oddly like quiet, nice guy.
But Gonzo's a quiet, nice guy, too. Like, so that side of the ball.
What's Carlton Davis or Harold Landry? Landry seems like a good dude. I don't think he's going to get out over. Milton Williams might be our guy. He seems like he's funny.
Well, but he might be tired from playing a lot.
He's the most accomplished with making the most money. You hope that those guys are also kind of those players too.
Yeah, and this is not the biggest deal. If they play well, all these various guys, the spokesman, the first guy to the podium after a game is totally irrelevant. Should remind you also that Drake May will be holding a press conference Thursday, Gillette Stadium. First time we've heard from him since before the Bills game. Remember, he didn't talk after the Bills game, and then he didn't talk the day after, the garbage bag day.
He get asked about Joe Milton?
He will absolutely be asked about Joe Milton, his relationship.
That better not be the first question, though.
How much you want to bet? Because I can run down there and try to make it the first question and rig this bet a little bit if you want me to.
That'd be awesome if you went down there.
Maybe I will.
Representing the show.
I try. But then I get mocked. Then I get mocked when I say I sat behind David Andrews and Joe Cardona at Vrabel's press conference.
We're just keeping you honest. It's a brag, and we told you were bragging.
617-779-7937. We're talking Red Sox, Patriots. And up next, we're going to get to the NFL draft because there is more to chew on. I know Ted wants to talk about Shedeur Sanders, who's the greatest fifth-round quarterback in the history of the world. Should have gone number two overall.
I sure do.
Now he's in the fifth round. See how that ties into his thoughts on Deion and the coaching job that's going on at Colorado. We'll have our favorite pick, I think, from the Patriots, which I also put up as a poll question. Some interesting results there. Little NFL Patriots draft talk up next here on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball, give me what's trending.